This is Radio City Talk.
Ped is here from the Blue Room. Morning, Ped.
Morning.
And Ped never ceases to amaze me. Just reading through the Echo here. I'm going to go slightly off tangent and do a news story first of all. So the front page of the Echo: rail strike to hit the Grand National, and this is the threat of a walkout because Merseyrail are looking at driver only trains. And then Ped said to me, he said, "I used to be a guard on a train." I was like, what? I never saw that coming. you have sympathy with this walkout. So a 24-hour strike on April the 8th. Tell us why, because effectively they're talking about getting rid of the job that you used to do on the train, which was the train guard.
Yeah, and that's absolutely ridiculous if you ask me. Because, and I know this is the national, and listen, I honestly don't think this will happen. It's a fantastic negotiation tool and all power to them, but I don't think it'll get that far. But the reason why people should know why these people are standing up for themselves is because a guard on the train is looking after your safety, and the driver is driving the train effectively. People have got to remember that. So if the driver suddenly gets the responsibility of looking after you as well, how does he drive the train as well? Now, that's okay. That's, people might be thinking of all the big things that might happen on a train, but think of all the little things that can happen on a train. Think of it at night when maybe a girl's coming home from town and there's a group of lads and she feels slightly threatened, and then maybe she just sees the guard out the corner of her eye walking down the train asking for tickets, or just doing the doors, just keep an eye on things. Someone being sick on a train, imagine that. Imagine being on a train, a full train, and someone's sick. It can happen. The driver's responsible, the guard is responsible for that as well. He effectively is looking after the safety and the welfare of all those people on the train, and the driver is driving the train. And listen as well, the other thing about it is, think about a train going at like 80, 90 miles an hour as well. You know, you think of all those hazards that driver has to concentrate all the time, all the lights, making sure, you know, that's not an easy job. And if he's got the worry in the back of his head of all those passengers as well, that makes his job. You know, he's suddenly not concentrating on what's happening in front of him. And, okay, maybe the newer trains will be easier for the driver. But if he's got to be getting out of his cabin every 2 minutes to look after something that's happening on the train, that is just going to cause all kinds of nonsense. And I know Merseyrail have said it's not going to affect anyone's job and everyone's going to keep their job. But what happened? What about the next set of people who want to be guards? Because this is the other thing. If you work in a booking office, or, you know, you're any kind of staff, you want to become a guard and then you want to become a driver. It's the natural step up. It's a natural progression. If that's taken away from you, that's a massive leap, becoming a driver. So I think people have got to remember all these things. They are looking after your safety.
What you're saying is a guard is absolutely fundamental to the running of a train. I mean, I don't think even any passengers would be happy to see a train driver leave his position at the front of the train to try and deal with the duties that a guard deals with.
No, and I tell you the other thing about it. I've been on a train where a driver's actually gone through a red light, and it's a huge thing, an absolutely huge thing. There's big investigations of because if a driver goes through a red light, in effect, he's entering another train space, and that's how crashes happen. And we all know if a train hits another train, it's not just a simple little bump like a car. It can end up in life-changing, you know, things and deaths and all the rest of it. That driver has to be 100% concentrated on what he's doing. And if you suddenly put other little things in his mind, then that is really going to complicate it. So I know it might affect your day now and again, and I know this could affect a lot of people's day. I don't think it'll get that far, but people have got to realise it is for their safety, and that's why the guards are striking.
Do you generally tend to find that passengers are quite happy, quite pleased to have the presence of a guard around?
I think they are, but I don't know if they fully appreciate what their job is. And that's the top and bottom of it. Their responsibilities. And the responsibilities actually used to just be sitting in the back opening the doors, and that's what it felt like. But I know now more of them go up and down the trains asking for tickets and things like that. But they are responsible for your safety. If anything happens on that train, it's on them to sort it out, whether it be first aid, whether it be any kind of incident. It's down to that guard. And we've seen the opposite recently, where guards have been taken to court. And I know of one guard, who went to prison because a girl fell under his train because he was not concentrating and he wasn't watching the doors when he was open. I think it was at James Street. So that's the flip side of it. They're responsible for all that. So if that suddenly becomes a driver's job as well, if he's concentrating on driving the train, he's got to worry about those doors, and maybe he's a little bit late. And when you're late, you get fined for every minute. So think about the responsibility the managers put on a guard or a driver to keep that train on time, because every minute it's money. They get fined incredibly for being late. So you've got to consider all those things. That, you know, if you go on a Virgin train, you're falling over the staff, because they know it's up. They need staff for every single job. And Maysvale are suddenly trying to take staff away just because they've got these new super-duper trains. No, you need someone in the back to look after you. That's the top and bottom of it.
So as a former guard yourself, it's not just about prospective job losses. Yeah. It's about all the other safety issues and every other job that a guard does.
Yeah, 100%. It's looking after the passenger.
Okay, let's get on to Everton. Good weekend win, but perhaps more eyes are focused on what tomorrow's going to all be about. As Joe Anderson, you huff, but actually, you only huff because there's that slight tinge of fear in the corner of your head that thinks, is tomorrow not going to see anything happen?
It's not fear, because I've got absolutely no doubt what's coming.
Well, go on then, what's coming tomorrow?
No, it mightn't be tomorrow. I've got,
oh, really?
I don't know. This is the point. I don't know. I've got absolutely no credible source apart from
Joe Anderson's tweet. Do you not think he might have followed that tweet up with something else if he'd put people on the wrong track?
Maybe he would, but what I'm saying is I honestly don't know. So I'm not necessarily getting all excited that tomorrow's the day. But I know the day is coming. If it's not tomorrow, it's coming. I know it's coming.
It needs to be tomorrow.
It's happened. It'd be great if it's tomorrow, because we've already... spoke about it on the Blue Room. It'd be great if it's tomorrow, and whatever. You know, the only reason I'm slightly, not dismissive, but it feels like it's such a huge decision that it needs more than just Joe Anderson tweeting about it, if that makes sense.
He shouldn't have tweeted about
it. No, he shouldn't have.
And actually, his social media, he does go a little bit astray, doesn't he?
I have no problem with this.
Well, you might like it, but actually, for a person in a position of power, I tend to think that social media is a little bit wayward.
Well, if we want to talk about positions of power, there's a certain man in America who tweets all kinds of things, and he's apparently the leader of the free world.
Well, he doesn't set a great example, does he?
But at least Johansson's a little bit tongue-in-cheek when he does things. No, it just feels like if it was happening tomorrow, there would be a few more leaks and a few more people would know. And I'm not getting that sense, but I'm not saying it's not going to happen. And I think a lot of people are expecting this huge announcement with all the plans. And I've got the feeling if it does come out, it'll be a statement, a three-source statement from Everton, the council and Peel, basically saying Everton have purchased the land to build a new stadium, and that'll be it.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
And all the other stuff will come later. I mean, I know there are...
But actually, that's good enough, isn't it?
That is good enough. That's good enough for me. That's the groundwork, and all the other stuff can come later. And you know, as long as we know it's happening. But I generally feel like we know it's happening anyway. And I know there's still a lot of people out there that don't think it's going to happen, and it's still pie in the sky. And I understand why they think like that, because Everton have had other occasions where things haven't happened when we've blown them up. But I do generally feel like we're on track now, and it is going to happen, and all the right people are making the right noises. And obviously last week Peel were the last people to sort of open up about it, and I think they were in France announcing what was happening at Waterfront, and they openly said we're in talks with Everton and we hope to conclude the deal soon. All the parties have been talking like that, so you get the sense that it is going to happen sooner or later. Whether it be tomorrow, I don't know.
An hour ago, we were talking to Professor Tom Cannon. So he was just talking about some of the finances around it, maybe some of the finer details. So I'd said to him, how many seats can actually sort of go? What is the right number of seats? And he was talking about the immense detail with which they would have had to try and calculate what they could do in terms of a size of a stadium. What would you have a guess at? What would you believe Everton can maintain in terms of crowd numbers, attendances? What should they be looking at for a new stadium?
A minimum 60,000.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Well, actually, and that wasn't really what he was saying.
Well, he can say what he wants, and I know...
No, it's only his opinion,
I know,
isn't
he's
it?
Crunch. He's more about crunching the numbers, and I know...
The club will be as well,
but
won't
I think, I think, there's, I think that if you look at the demand at the moment for Everton tickets, they're everywhere. It's sold out. I know the corporate's sold out for the whole of the season and has been since...
But is that not the problem at the moment? Whereas, actually, if you'd looked at previous...
No, because...
So, say two seasons ago, I could have got a ticket from the box office for any Everton game.
I think you can still get a ticket for the box office for every game if you want. But the point is, they do sell. And I see the demand, and I see the demand from foreign fans, and I see the demand from lads in Ireland going out...
Day trippers.
Just... But they're not... See, this is where the data for this team becomes a little bit swayed. These are proper Evertonians.
I'm not saying that negatively.
No, but these are proper Evertonians that come week in, week out. I know at the weekend there was the Irish Evertonians, the American Evertonians, and the Norwegian Evertonians, believe it or not. And they all came for...
You're taking our fans.
We've got our own. They all come over, and the club look after them. Now, there's a lot of people out there who want season tickets and not going to be able to get them, and they're going to jump on. And obviously, the new stadium. Look at West Ham. Look at the bounce they've had since they got a new stadium. Look at Tottenham when they're playing at Wembley. There will be a bounce. There'll be a bounce because there's a new stadium, and of course, it will attract the so-called day trippers who are basically just coming to see a new stadium. It's more how the club deal with them and where they put those fans and make sure they're not the priority, where some other clubs you feel like they've become the priority. But I think 60, I think we can cope with 60. And I also think that there should be ambition shown that we can deal with it. So sticking our necks out and saying, this is where we're going, this is what we want to do. And also, you've got to remember, there'll probably be an increase in away fans as well. Corporate facilities, because everyone's going to want to come to a new stadium and everything that goes with it. So 60's got to be the minimum for me.
Just got some sad news just breaking in the last few minutes. Liverpool legend Ronnie Moran passed away this morning at the age of 83. Remarkable man, of course. Brand new book, which his son helped to write and source. Only just been out a couple of weeks, and Paul was meant to come in last week. So we were aware that Ronnie had been suffering from some ill health. But Ronnie Moran, very sadly, passing away. We talked about him on the Legend Show a week or so ago. Won 44 different honours during his time at Liverpool Football Club, and did virtually every job at Liverpool Football Club as well. So rest in peace, Ronnie Moran. His son Paul released a tweet this morning. I'm devastated to tell everyone on behalf of the family that my dad passed away this morning after a short illness. Ronnie Moran did everything from even managing the club for a few weeks after Kenny Dalglish left before Graeme Souness stepped in to take full control. Of course, influential and instrumental part of the boot room as well. I'm sure there'll be many, many tributes today. Brian Reid's just put on Twitter, RIP, Mr. Liverpool, the golden thread throughout all the glory years. There's so many former Liverpool players who were in touch with him and thought highly and fondly of him. So a lot of tributes coming in now to Ronnie Moran, who has sadly passed away at the age of 83. To win that many honours, truly remarkable. Imagine finishing your career with 44 honours.
Incredible.
It is.
It's funny, I just the memory comes straight back to me to my head there of, you know, when you remember the old picture of the boot room with them all just drinking the cups of tea. You know, just that image in your head of you know, Ronnie Moran, Joe Fagan, Bob Paisley, and just all sitting there. And how it was in the 80s, where it was just passing on to the next one, and they just get on with the job. It's completely different age, but completely worked for Liverpool. And really, other teams tried to do that, and no one else could. Very strange, very, very strange how that works so well. But it just shows you how all those people all fitted in together so well.
Yeah, him, Roy Evans, Bob, Fagan, Shanks. Incredible, incredible legacy. But Ronnie Moran, aged 83. I believe he could be a real hard nut as well. He was one of those whose path you didn't want to cross. And he was also one of those who gave you no credit. You know, it was almost an expectation that you always won year after year. They used to recount the stories how they'd hand the league championship winning medals out. He'd just throw the medal at you. If there was no sort of ceremony, if it was Ronnie Moran. But loads of brilliant stories that go around. And I'm sure throughout the course of the day right here on Radio City Talk, there'll be plenty more tributes given to Ronnie Moran, who's passed away at the age of 83 years old.
This is Radio City Talk.